Cleveland and Northeast Ohio has secured a WNBA franchise as part of the expansion. They're going the league from 15 teams to 18 teams to talk about that. And so much more is Nick Barlage, Chief Executive Officer of Rock Entertainment Group. He holds a lot of titles, wears a lot of hats, and I'm sure, Nick, the most exciting one recently is this one with the big announcement yesterday, Nick.
Yeah, I think, first of all, thank you, gentlemen, for having me on this morning. We are thrilled to be back in the business of women's professional sports, specifically within the WNBA. And I got to tell you, the reaction over the last 24 hours has been nothing short of remarkable. And a big reason why, at the end of the day, we said the enthusiasm and energy of the people of Northeast Ohio created the foundation for this moment. It has been borne out to be true in the last 24 hours.
Nick, so how does this all come together here? Because it's been rumored for a long time. When did you guys first make overtures to the WNBA and in fact, bringing a team back to Cleveland?
Yeah, we've been working on it for about 3 years now. You know, and when we started the process, it really was about women's sports in general. We wanted to find a way to diversify our platform, to kind of level the playing field, if you will. We got involved with the Tennis in the Land, the WTA 250 tournament that's here in town. We looked at the NWSL, but the WNBA was always kind of the prime focus for us. And so as we rounded the corner and got ready for the 2024 Women's Final Four, which was just an epic event to be able to host in partnership with the Greater Cleveland Sports Commission, we really crystallized our focus on women's professional basketball. And, we submitted our bid this last September officially. And we found out at some point in time in February that we were one of the recipients. And then we found out recently that we were the first recipient of it, you know, beating out cities like Austin and Nashville, which I think is a great sign for Cleveland. We should be very proud of what we've accomplished, today and yesterday by winning this bid. We have a phenomenal sports city, and it showed itself to be true in this process.
Nick, what is staggering to me is it was just a few years ago when the WNBA decided to really expand their footprint. The Golden State was, their city was awarded within a team for $50 million. And it looks like the expansion fees are up to $250 million. We know about the explosion of women's sports in terms of a growth sector. Astronomical right now. Smart, wealthy people are getting involved, not just Dan Gilbert here, but in Philadelphia, Blitzer and Harris getting involved. What does that say about the trajectory of all of this? Because initially, when we had some people detracting, saying it didn't work the first time, how's it going to work this time? I said, look where the money's going. There's some really wealthy, smart individuals that are putting their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, I will say this, regardless of what's been reported from a financial end, we kind of have this belief that money and numbers, they don't follow in these situations. And so, and our thesis around this investment is when we still feel like we're very much an early mover, to be the 16th team, you think about the growth of the NBA, right? If this thing gets to 30 teams over time, and then you also think about the regular season, the playoffs, they're as the teams grow, they're going to have to expand those. All of those are greenfield opportunities for us to grow this game, grow the economics of this game. So we actually feel like we're getting in at a deal. And if you look at recently, there's been some minority transactions with the New York Liberty and the Seattle Storm. We're actually walking into something that makes a lot of sense financially. I want to be very clear. That's not why we did it. We did it to inspire the next generation of girls and women here, not just here in Northeast Ohio, but across the great state of Ohio, to really give them a role model set that we feel like our community deserves.
Nick Barlage joining us here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Well, you're mentioning the state of Ohio. You mentioned the state of Ohio yesterday. How do you plan to market it? Because Cleveland is a very large metro and the team is based here. But how do you reach out to Columbus, even Pittsburgh and some of the other cities that don't have the WNBA?
Yeah, look, this is the state of Ohio's first professional women's sports team. And so as you think about that, we'd be foolish if we didn't engage Cincinnati, Columbus, to your point, Pittsburgh. This is going to be a regional asset. And it's no different than how we approach the Cavs, quite frankly. When you look at our youth academy, we do youth academy basketball camps and clinics from Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky all the way through to upstate New York. And so for us, this is something that we have figured out. We have poured a lot of infrastructure and resources into. And so we're very excited to take this team across the state and showcase what women's professional sports can do.
You know, obviously, Nick, when people mention WNBA, the first name that comes up every time is Caitlin Clark. And I'm not going to get you in trouble with any kind of tampering or anything like that, looking into free agency.
Oh, wow, he can get into trouble now.
In the future. God. Right. I know you probably could have a week ago, but things have changed. But talk to fans here in Northeast Ohio about the viability of this, you know, considering, yeah, Caitlin Clark's probably not going to be in the fold in Cleveland, but as a league, this thing, unlike its first iteration when plenty of teams folded, including Cleveland, including Houston, why it truly is different this time around?
Yeah, I just think you're seeing the stickiness of women's professional sports. You know, there was a stat I saw, this was like 3 weeks ago, you know, Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese played on a Sunday going up against, I believe it was the Yankees and the Red Sox. They had a higher viewership by 400,000 people. 1.7 million people watched that game to the 1.3 million that watched the Yankees and the Red Sox on Sunday Night Baseball. Put that, just let that sit there for a second, you know? And so as you see this growth happening, this isn't a moment, this is a movement. And so that's something we can't wait to get started with. And if you go back and you study, which we have, the level of talent in the college game and the talent that's coming behind that, this is a generational moment where you're going to see, you know, it's not just about Caitlin and Angel. It's also going to be about Juju Watkins here soon enough and so many other great women's athletes. And the game, if you spend any time watching the game has this purity to it that we get really excited about. And when you look at, like, even what the Valkyries have been able to do this year within the WNBA as an expansion franchise, I think the power rankings came out this last week. They were sixth. You know, so this is an opportunity for us to get after this, to compete. As Kobe said yesterday, we're going to put world-class resources around this franchise, and we think we got a real shot to continue to build on the championship caliber culture we have here that, you know, our chairman Dan Gilbert holds us accountable to.
Nick, it is my understanding that people have already reached out about acquiring tickets.
I got to tell you guys, we are over 2,500 deposits. I've already been signed up for in the last 24 hours. So please get out. It's a $28 initial payment. We would love to have your support in this journey. You can go to our website, WNBAcleveland.com, to be able to check it all out. But it is, I've been just thrilled with the way the market has responded. I mean, let's put it this way. We've taken a deposit every 3 minutes since we dropped this announcement at 10 a.m. yesterday.
It's staggering because obviously, you know, with the Cavs, we had seen certain moments in time, certain inflection points when you probably had to have a few more operators standing by. And I imagine that was a similar experience yesterday, considering the amount of people that flocked over to the WNBAcleveland.com website. I know I was on it, steadily updating it.
Yeah, you never really know what to expect when you get in these moments. We knew because we have such a great sports city, such a great sports region, that the reception was going to be strong just based on some of the, you know, some of the leaks that had happened earlier in the year. But once you're actually in the moment, we had set some goals for what we thought would be great to achieve in the first day, and we blew them out of the water. And so now it's really just about how do we continue to harness this momentum and elevate the growth that we think we can bring to the women's game.
Well, how strategic right now is the WNBA? We talked about staggering the next three teams they're adding as part of expansion. I had a chance to talk to Kathy Engelbert, that's the WNBA commissioner, over the course of, you know, the Final Four a few years ago. And I was asking about Cleveland, and she said, look, you know, it's part of the pitch process. Cleveland's going to have to come up with the money. Well, clearly that was not a problem. But how strategic was the league? Why did they think Cleveland now as the first, you know, iteration of this new expansion?
Yeah, when you look at the infrastructure we have, which has been led by Dan's investment in Northeast Ohio, I said this yesterday, you know, when we finish retrofitting the existing practice facility in Independence when the men's team moves to the Cleveland Clinic Global Peak Performance Center on the riverfront, Dan and the Gilbert family will have invested $1.1 billion in bricks and mortar around sports and entertainment in Northeast Ohio since he purchased the team. At that, in 2028, it'll be 23 years. And so when you think about that, we have the infrastructure. We are ready-made. We have a world-class arena at Rocket Arena. We have now two practice facilities. this was a fit that could not have been more pure. And it all starts with, you know, there was actually a video, Dan just crossed 20 years of owning the franchise here, but there's been this past March. And there's a video of him from day one. And he said, we're going to make this, and I get chills in the back of my neck when I say this. He goes, we're going to make this and turn this into a world-class organization that's going to compete at the highest of levels. And you're seeing that be played out every single day in what he's delivered for this city and this region. And so for us and for the league, they were literally like, we're ready. I mean, guys, we're ready for a team next year. And then that was their message to us. We have not seen a bid that's this ready-made around the WNBA with the new requirements that are coming ever. And so we were very excited to be able to pursue this. But once again, this is a chess game we've been at for quite a while. And it comes down to investment. It comes down to cap. It kind of comes down to care. And it comes down to passion for this community.
I got one more. How do you go about the process of determining a name for the new team?
It's a great question. We are going to be very thoughtful. Grant Gilbert, who works with us, is actually Dan's oldest son, is going to help us lead this process. It's with our marketing team, led by Chris Kaiser. We have a very thoughtful, thorough process. We're just excited now that we can actually talk about it publicly, fellas, because we've been kind of holding this back. But I think over the next 6 months would be our goal, is to get something out there, give or take, obviously, depending on the process. But we're going to go out. We're going to get fan insights from the marketplace. We're going to survey the heck out of people. We're going to understand where their passions lie. And then we're going to stress test and trial balloon a couple of concepts, a couple of ideas. We want to pay homage to the Rocker's past. I want to be very clear about that. But we want something that really sets us up for the future. We think Cleveland's best years are going to be in front of us here over the next 10, 15, 20 years. And we want to make sure we have a brand that aligns with that.
Nick Barlage, CEO, Rock Entertainment, welcoming in the WNBA back to Cleveland where it belongs. Nick, thanks for coming on. And obviously, you continue to give us updates. And we look forward to seeing that number grow for season tickets over at WNBACleveland.com.
Yeah, pump us up a little bit, guys. Every little bit helps. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Nick. Nick Barlage.
Already received 2,500 deposits on tickets for the Cleveland WNBA team in 2028. Donald says, yeah, right, more like 25.
And what's Donald's handle?
Big Bark wants to know. It's right there. This is not Dennis 6969. These are real. You can go to my mentions. Big Bark wants to know what the deposit amount was. It was $28.
Yeah.
Also says he doesn't like that.
It's called, it's called a deposit.
And we're thankful for Big Bark listening, because he said 30 teams. Come on, man. You can try to hype up a league without being unrealistic.
Yeah, and I don't know if they get up to 30, but I mean, why not? Why is that so impossible to believe?
So I felt this way when I first started watching the WNBA in any sort of earnestness last year. Because I did not watch the WNBA before that, and I ain't going to pretend like I did.
I had no reason to watch it either. Like I said,
you guys weren't watching the W?
No.
Like I said, the original version of it was, it was nice that they attempted a women's basketball league. It was not ready. The sport, I mean, you want to talk about how all these sports evolve. Like MMA was a sport that when it started, I thought it was awesome to watch, it sucked as a mixed martial arts, like a true competitive sport. Nobody knew what they were doing. And you had ridiculous, almost bare knuckle brawls. And obviously the sport has come a long way since then. And they did so in a short period of time. That's what has happened with the WNBA. There has been the level of athlete that is in the WNBA today compared to 20 years ago, the dribbling ability compared to what it was 20 years ago, like you could see, the game doesn't look anything like it did 20 years ago. So now it's got a legitimate chance. It's found a home in terms of fans. Like you're seeing the ratings. Yes. Nick Barlage just told us a WNBA game easily outdrew a Yankees Red Sox game. Would you have said that 20 years ago? That would have been an impossibility.
No. You got to remember, this was a league that at one point, and they've come a long way, because I wasn't going to watch them before last year just because they just weren't on my product ladder, the WNBA was. So I learned a lot about how tough the league is to actually get into and stay in. that there's people taking like eighth overall and they like don't make the WNBA. Right. I had no idea about any of that before. So I learned a lot about that and how difficult it is. So you're trying to find this balance where you don't want to water down the league, but also you have made the league as the elite can be, where you have first round picks that don't make the league. Yes.
Well, I just, when you look at that, look at the NBA model. How many late, you know, pick 20 and beyond really make NBA rosters and make impact?
It's very small.
That's a 30-team league when you've got a 12-team league. When you expand rosters like this, you have a chance for those picks to stick around a little more.
Even they, and I know they stash them in Europe and places like that, but it's like, man, like if they're not, women's college basketball, it's like they're here and then they're gone. They're just gone because they're in other parts of the country, also, world playing basketball. Yes.
Unfortunately, the salary right now. There are women that can go make more money not playing in the WNBA if they want.
But there's an evolution to everything. There's an evolution to every professional sport. You know, at one point, you could exchange NFL teams with a handshake and a box of cigars.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Changed. You got to grow the league to really have a chance to do that.
Because there was a time, and ESPN will run away from it like crazy. Like, there was a time where they had promotions for WNBA games where there was like the commercials with two guys playing basketball in their driveway, and they were like tackling each other and double dribbling, and there was like the WNBA, they're better than you are. It's like, that is not something you would put in 2025.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Plus, it's not applicable in 2025. So I think for the future of it, yeah. And when you have a star like Caitlin Clark, let's call it what it is, and you have incoming stars like Juju Watkins, there is a future there. Now, for its staying power, how long, you know, what makes it stay this time around? You know, what other than just being buoyed by the NBA? You know, Jim Rome had that awkward conversation with David Stern years ago in his interview with him, like, about the WNBA and keeping the WNBA. What's going to make it other than that? And I think Caitlin Clark is the major turning point, because every sport needs somebody to help shape its future and put it on that next level. And it has to happen at a certain time.
Yeah, that's what happened. I mean, the NBA, it was Bird and Jordan. I mean, Bird and Magic started it, and then Jordan. I mean, those three were more responsible for the NBA becoming a legitimate sport. Yeah. It was not really considered a legitimate sport, you know, in the 70s. It just wasn't. It wasn't on the same playing field.
You see a major opportunity here, where the proliferation in girls' basketball at a young level has exploded. You see a major star like Caitlin Clark, who is probably, you said it, and I think you're right, the third biggest star in the game. You know, who sells when they go on the road? LeBron is going to sell out, especially now, because you don't know when it's the end. So LeBron is going to sell out every arena he goes to. Steph is going to sell out every arena he goes to. Who else can you name?
Yeah, Caitlin Clark, what she does by the eyeballs. Just if you don't believe
number
me,
three or four.
Look at the attendance and look at the eyeballs. Like she was bigger than the sport of men's college basketball the year that she played. What she did to the NCAA tournament, even games she wasn't playing in. That everything in women's basketball from this point forward is going to be considered, when we have any discussions about it, is going to be pre Caitlin Clark and after Caitlin Clark. Now the sport has to build on that. It can't just be Caitlin Clark, obviously. Obviously, Angel Reese was a nice foe to start out. Clearly, they are not on the same playing field. Like Caitlin
she did
Clark,
have a much better month.
Yeah, her numbers were up, but she's not in the same stratosphere as Caitlin Clark. So they need other stars, and obviously, they're not going to be, if there are 18 teams, there's not going to be 18 Caitlin Clarks. You know, there's only so many that can help, you know, build this thing. I will say this for any of the people tweeting us the typical negative WNBA stuff, that's fine. You've been right in the past. If you have tweeted negative stuff about the WNBA, you were right. There's a reason so many teams folded the first time around. The country was not into women's basketball. They just weren't. Now, if you're paying attention to the money, if you're paying attention to not just Dan Gilbert, would you say he's pretty financially savvy?
Yeah.
Would you say the Harris Blitzer Sports Entertainment Group out of Philly, which is worth $12 billion, would you say that they've been pretty smart with their sports investments?
Yes.
Okay, if the smartest people and the wealthiest people in sports are investing in this, are you betting against them? For anybody that is being negative, are you betting against them?
No, Because in another thing is that people will go to the games. It will fill dates in the arenas. You know, you just had a renovation of this arena. You want to fill dates. It's going to help fill the dates. You already have a wildly successful hockey team that helps fill the. I mean, you're averaging over 10,000. Am I not mistaken, Owen? They average over 10 grand over there for every hockey home game over there. So attendance wise, and even on the ice in the last decade, but attendance wise, marketing wise, you had a wildly successful.
They've been top two every year for the last decade.
That team, it's remarkable how successful the hockey team is. So you want to see if you can work your magic with that and also do it with the WNBA. I want it to work out because I think it's pretty damn special to have that many sports teams in a city like Cleveland. Buffalo can't promote that many sports teams. Pittsburgh can't do it. Cincinnati can't do it. Who else can do that? In cities like ours. Cities like ours. Who promotes that many sports teams? Who has that many sports teams? So you can say whatever you want, and I know that we've had our big arguments here of the city in the last couple of months, certainly, but who else can promote that sort of thing? We can promote that sort of thing. Yeah, you get another team. Do we have something new here that we could possibly get into when I'm looking, which is a terrible way to promote it, but I'm... Okay, here we go. Daryl has put the statement out there. Do you want me to read the statement? All right, I'll read the statement.
That's a paragraph.
Daryl has a statement here from the Browns managing and principal partners, D and Jimmy Haslam. After Ohio Governor Mike DeWine signed the state budget late Monday with modifications to the Modell Law, a $600 million grant, for the Brook Park enclosed stadium, plus Cuyahoga County sin tax increase permissive. Quote, we respect the firm commitment and leadership that Governor DeWine and the Ohio Senate and House have shown in their collaborative work to find a responsible way to support such a transformative project, one that will create a generational impact for our region and the state. Our fans deserve a world-class facility, and we are committed to building a state-of-the-art enclosed stadium that resonates with Cleveland, highlighting our loyal and passionate fans and the Dog Pound, while also incorporating innovation, bold design, and an immersive experience. The new enclosed Huntington Bank Field will be completely fan-centric, a first-of-its-kind design in the NFL, and a dynamic venue that draws visitors from across Ohio and beyond for concerts and significant sporting events throughout the year. This premier facility will anchor a major lifestyle and entertainment development and be a catalyst for one of Northeast Ohio's largest economic development projects ever, and something our community will be proud of and can enjoy for years to come. We appreciate the support of the state leaders and their belief in this transformative project. So they have released a statement. The Browns have released a statement, and on we go. Boy, the rendering here of the giant plot of land looks really nice, doesn't it? Those are nice. And no further comment from the peanut gallery over here. All right, 216-474-0092. Now get back to the stadium coming up here in just a moment. There's a lot of folks. I'm getting some pushback on the Ty Jerome thing because I said, boy, I don't think there's a fan out there that would. It just seems to be the majority of the fans would not pick Sam Merrill over Ty Jerome. And I use that as my reasoning going, if it's that much common sense to the fans, wouldn't it be that much common sense to the Cleveland Cavaliers? Of picking Ty Jerome over Sam Merrill. That's why I'm led to believe that Ty Jerome had to have made his choice on his own.
But he would
until
not have
proven otherwise.
Yeah, he would not have made that choice if the Cavs had more money or had offered more money, right? Ty Jerome, someone who missed an entire season of the NBA and who was hanging on by a thread to stay in the NBA, who's never made big money in the NBA, he's not passing up guaranteed money if it had been there, mm-hmm. if it had been available.
Do you think the offer might not have been as big as he wanted if there was an offer?
Well, was it more than what he was offered from Memphis?
Because it's $9 million from Memphis,
yeah,
right?
We had thought that the Cavs were at the very least going to pony up $14 million. So that's $5 million over 3 years, $15 million, maybe a player option after two like he has in Memphis to get out of it if he's playing really well. No chance. I'm calling it right now. There's no chance someone in his position is giving up the $15 million guaranteed.
I'm just saying, like, what if it was only 10 and he thought he was going to get 15
mm-hmm.
and they offered 10 and he goes, you know what? I'm going to go out and test it. And they go, well, we're going to take Sam Merrill then. We're going to give Sam Merrill money.
Well, if you didn't want to lose both of them for crying out loud.
And then you end up going, yeah, maybe he goes out and shops and it's not, The market's not what he thought it was.
Ty Jerome is one of the most interesting players I think we've had in the last decade because you don't know what to necessarily do with him in terms of money when it comes to how much playing time.
You have a Peyton Hillis year? I mean, is that what that was?
Well, I mean, nothing's...
Came out of nowhere? Peyton Hillis was...
He didn't get the cover of...
No, but...
Yeah.
It's...
I mean, Peyton Hillis had the one great year.
Peyton Hillis doesn't have 37 or 28 million to show for
it. It's a decent comparison, I'll grant you that. I think that what I saw with Ty Jerome last year, 2 years ago, I should say, you know, injured for most of the year. I mean, the vast majority of the year with the ankle injury. I think if he did not have that extra year, I heard Danny Cunningham say it. I think he was right. You know, you question what his future was going to be in the NBA. He used this last year to his advantage. He plays with a very talented team. He shows up. He shows up big. But it's also he's been so good at times that it's made people wonder about their possibilities of what they could do with other trades. Could they put Ty Jerome in there and move on from Darius Garland? We got calls about that during the Miami series. And then the very next series, like you don't want the guy to do poorly, but it proves your point where the very next series, he's unplayable. Game five, he's unplayable against the Indiana Pacers. And you make your decision based on, okay, how many guys can help? Because for Ty Jerome, you mentioned he can create his own shot. Sam Merrill is completely at the whims of everybody else out there on the floor. Okay, but if Ty Jerome was offered comparable money, did the minutes make the difference? Because if he's playing more minutes and he feels he can get his shot, which he's going to be confident in himself, does he feel after 2 years, because it's a 3-year contract, but that third year is an option, does he feel he can make more money in 3 years than what he's being paid, which is about $19 million for the first 2 years of this contract? You know, that I think is a strong possibility for a guy like Ty Jerome. So he might be betting on himself at an age where he's going to be, what, 28? Where if he's shooting well, he can make another considerable amount of money. For the Cavs, they had to get somebody out of these two. And so they were going to bring back Sam Merrill. You made the trade, and we'll see what they do.
I just think they clearly picked the worst player of the two.
But I don't know if they had the choice. I don't know for a fact they had that choice.
Well, they did. They would have offered Ty Jerome more money. They didn't want to do that.
But do you want to pay him more money, even with the constrictions?
I would have paid Ty $14 million.
But doesn't the $14 million become so much more with the apron or whatever?
If they would have kept both of them, if they would have let Sam Merrill go, which what I'm surprised is, I feel like they love their system so much. They love the way that their development programs, like they don't think they could have found another Sam Merrill. Like Ty Jerome was a guy creating his own shot. And throughout the year, like Donovan would go to the bench or Darius would go to the bench and you didn't miss a beat with Ty Jerome. That's not the case for Sam Merrill. And if you're going to use the playoffs against Ty Jerome, you can use the playoffs against Sam Merrill. Sam Merrill did not shoot it well in the Indiana series at all. So what was he, 33% from three? I don't know what they're seeing in Sam Merrill that they gave him that contract at the expense of keeping Ty Jerome.
I said this last week. My uncle had seats from the Muni, from Old Municipal. And when he died in his estate, it was included in the auction. And I got there like afterwards because I thought I put him in the pile like, don't sell this. Don't go selling these things. And apparently it got mixed up and they sold those seats and I was pissed. Because I'm like, well, I'm never going to be able to get the seats again, which they were heavy as hell. And I didn't own a home at the time. So probably my father knew best and probably did it on purpose because he knew I was just going to keep these seats in his house for the next 30 years for crying out loud. But now that I have the chance to buy the new seats or get the new seats, if I can just take them from it, I'd love to just take the seats.
Will they let us bring in a hacksaw to the final game?
Very creative ways to get a ratchet in nowadays.
Can you saw them out the way the one guy did?
You should be able to saw them out. We'll have to do some recon on that.
Well, if the team's good by the time 2028's here, and at the end of the season, you're going to be too busy watching the team to actually saw the seats out.
You might be. I'm a Chiefs fan, guys. I will be walking behind people and just sawing away they're cheering on their team.
It's going to take some doing in them seats. I don't even know. You can't put no hacksaws and no handsaws and no clear plastic bag. You ain't going to let you in there with that. It's a different NFL than it was in 95. You what?
Just pre-screen it.
I can get the clear and do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if the Cleveland Browns, when people say that is so Browns, right? That's Brownsian, that's Cleveland Browns.
Building a new stadium?
Could you come up with something that is more Cleveland Browns, if that thing even exists? Could you come up with something more than the Browns in their final year at that stadium on the lakefront are in a playoff game at home where it's snowy, wintry, the wind is going nuts.
Yeah, I know what you're doing.
And we win the game based on the other team looking hapless in those conditions. And then that's the last game at that stadium. And then it
sounds like this.
Now, with just 58 seconds remaining, Mike Phipps had one of his greatest moments. Slipping and sliding in the muddy turf, he unloaded two perfect passes over the middle, despite a prevent defense designed to stop them. Phipps had again brought his team to field goal range, and with only 13 seconds left, Don Cockcroft, standing in almost the same spot, got his second chance to redeem himself and win this vital game.
Who hit the drum in the studio? Audio courtesy NFL Films. It would be very Brownsian for them to win their final game in the stadium, like if a kicker... Harrison Butker slips on his ass and falls, and it goes catawampus, and we end up winning the game.
Their very first home playoff game in that stadium, and it's the last game.
And then we go to the temperature-controlled office space that is the new Brown Stadium.
It's going to be nice. I think there's a lot of things that are changing there. Who is going to... I want to get back into the ticket thing here in a bit, but who's going to play in the new stadium? Who can you guarantee from this football team is going to play in the new stadium?
Yeah, I gave one name immediately.
Okay, what is it?
I said Mason Graham.
Okay, Mason Graham I think is one.
He was my guarantee because of the position he plays, because he's a rookie. I feel like he will hold up for a long time. That to me is a candidate. He's not going to ask out. He's not going to like demand a trade. Those positions... they're not really divas.
This is 5 years. When's the last time they drafted a defensive tackle and he actually stayed longer than 5 years?
Now, that is true, but he also was at the top of the draft. So I get what you're saying. You're right.
I mean, I feel like we can name defensive tackles that you thought were going to be stalwarts there, and then they're gone.
All right. I think he's the only guy I can mention that hasn't, off the top of my head. DeJuan Jones, 5 years? It's 5 years away. This year's a big one. If he stays healthy this year and he plays well.
Do I put money on it today?
I'm not telling you to put money on anything, especially when the segment we're going to do at 922. I don't know if we want to do that.
It's called putting on the money.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is?
I just made it.
Okay, I will say him. I'm going to say DeJuan Jones because I love DeJuan Jones. And that's two. That's it.
Harold Fannin?
I don't want to besmirch the young man because he hasn't even played yet, but neither is Mason Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mason Graham is a number 5 overall pick. Damn it, Owen's right. Those guys tend to have longevity, but again, what Owen is saying is like he could be playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 5 years. You don't know that. Hope not. But that means he would still be playing in our stadium. Like, there's plenty of...
Anybody... I noticed... There's been an obvious name that nobody has said.
Who?
Shador Sanders.
I didn't even think about it.
If none of us even thought Shador Sanders, is that pretty telling to how we feel about Shador Sanders?
No, I thought about it. I just didn't want to say it. That's the same reason that I don't want to say DeJuan Jones. I can't guarantee. Mm-hmm. He would be one that I'd lean towards, but if we're trying to actually put something on it today and say, oh, I know this guy will be here in 5 years.
216-474-0092.
Slim Pickens.
On this current roster, who's going to be playing for the Browns on opening day 2029? In that stadium, new stadium. Who is going to go from in the snow to under the dome? Who's going to do it?
Denzel in his farewell season?
I don't think it's...
We get that many more years out of Denzel?
He's already like that'll 8 years like in.
That'll be 11
or 12.
That's a
Joe Hayden career.
Yeah, he came in 2018.
That's a long career.
He's season 12.
I didn't say Miles. 5 years from now? I know you could say that's when his contract ends.
Oof. I think he got a shot at Miles, but again, would I bet on it? Especially after the trade request? And
all right, this year's a big one for him. This year's a big one.
Uh-huh.
MJ or Martin Emerson? Anybody can speak at any time.
MJ, what are you saying?
MJ Emerson.
I thought you were asking me one of two players.
No, no, no.
MJ Emerson.
It goes by MJ or Martin, depending on what depth chart you're looking at.
Okay.
Martin Emerson. Yes or no? 5 years. Had a good year, had a not so good year. Remember that? I'm telling you guys, that joint practice against Justin Jefferson, I was like, oh my God, this guy's going to be Darrell Revis.
I think he got a shot.
Owen?
Once again, I think you got to put some stakes on the line here.
There's no
and I'm
stakes
not putting
on the
any
line.
Stakes on the line
waiting
for Martin Emerson. No.
I'm waiting 5 years to do this. No. What's your gut telling you right now, no. man?
No. My gut says no, Ken.
I think if they were coming off a Super Bowl, like if look at our schedule or look at our team, right? Let me give me another depth chart.
If Martin Emerson was like a Pro Bowler already, maybe.
We'll go get the Eagles depth chart real quick.
So well, he looked like he was on his way to being a Pro Bowler.
Then he looked like he was on his way to being in the league.
Yeah. Let me tell
Boy,
you.
Boy, it's weird.
Okay. If we had the Eagles depth chart, we just won a Super Bowl, right?
Yep.
And these guys all played for the Browns. This is to show you how difficult it is in the NFL. Right down the line, if you got your depth chart in front of you, get your depth chart. I'm sure he's looking up shooting ranges and everything else over there. A.J. Brown, no. Devontae Smith, 2021 draft pick, 2029,
maybe.
Landon Dickerson, yeah. Cam Jurgens, probably. Lane Johnson,
nope.
No. Dallas Goedert,
nope.
No. Like, there's not the Saquon Barkley ain't gonna be in the league by then. Nope. Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, yes,
maybe, yeah. He'd be the most likely on the defense.
I got three guys.
Three?
I got three
okay.
guys. Maybe Cooper DeJean and Reed Blankenship.
Cooper DeJean's going to... Oh. He can be on that team for the next 50 years, according to the TikTok videos I've seen.
I'll say Quinyon Mitchell going to be playing there? Because you might have to make decisions anyway. But he is very frugal. He might live in the stadium for all we know.
I want to know where the fans are. That
the other thing is... We missed it. There's a guy that should be on the Browns that we should be able to say, but we can't because of the injuries, and we don't even know if he'll ever play football again. So, JOK should be the guy.
JOK would have.
Man,
he would have been set in stone.
Yeah.
Had he
He'd
not
be the guy
this
that you're going. In fact, 5 years from now, JOK would be the guy that you're building all of the fanfare around. He's the one doing all of the welcome to the stadium.
I want to hear from the Shadorians. You just hit it right there, though, you guys. I want to hear it from the Shadorians right now. Can you guarantee me Shador Sanders will be playing for the Browns in that stadium? You're shaking your head. I'm talking to the fans of Shador Sanders. I got to call it down the line. I got to call it as I seize it. I want to know from the fans of Shador, will he be playing in that stadium for the Browns? I mean, as of right now, you can't say yes. You cannot. You can hope. I hope they all do. I hope Joel Bitonio finds the fountain of youth and he's playing for that team in 2029.
That'd be
in
great.
That stadium.
He'd be, what, 16-year NFL vet?
Of course, then there's plenty of people going, Ken, they won three games last year. You really want all these guys playing in that stadium in 2029? Yeah, fair enough.